soccer matters.
Quick shot, score! The US with Dempsey!
To Fabregas, who looks for Iniesta, who's onside! Spain score!
Entonces el centro de Madrid.
Soccer Matters, Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Texas is home to the Gold Cup semifinals. It'll be the U.S. Qatar at Q2 Stadium in Austin on Thursday night. And here at the beautiful Energy Stadium, it'll be Mexico and Canada. It's getting to that time at the Gold Cup now. It's exciting stuff. It will be packed out at Energy, and it'll be another one of those very passionate nights, certainly for Mexican national team fans. And for full disclosure here, Matt was only supposed to say one segment. I kind of put him in a tough position there. What could he say? Anything other than, oh, I'll stay for another segment. So, Matt, for that, I apologize, but I also thank you for sticking in for another segment, because there's just so much we can talk to you about, okay?
No problem. Any chance to talk soccer with you, I'll take it.
It's always fun, right? We have a good time. We're touching on a lot of stuff. So you were going to talk a little bit more about potentially being more of a selling club and the desires of Ted Siegel. Let me open that one up to you again to start this segment.
Well, listen, I think we all know we need to become a selling league. You know, it's not just a selling team. And I mean, look, that's been a part of our, you know, what we've been working towards for a while. And you know, obviously we've sold guys like Morrow or Albert, and we just sold Christian, right? And so I think that's something that's really important for us as a league. Especially as we're getting to the point where there's, you know, you can only expand so much. And so I think that's something you're seeing more and more, and that's got to be a goal of all of ours. And it is a goal of ours as a club as well.
Talking to Matt Jordan, Dynamo General Manager, you mentioned Christian Ramirez going to Scotland. And I know Ari Lassiter can play as a center forward. Is that a little bit of a concern, being thin there with Maxi Arruti? Because Maxi Arruti has been such a part of this team this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's like anything, when someone moves out, you know, it opens up the door for other players. I mean, sometimes what happens, Glenn, organically, especially when you're in the day to day like us, like when guys are away on international duty, you feel like they're not even, you know, they're not a part of the team, which they aren't in that moment, you know, but I mean, now that we're starting to get guys back, you know, that we have the guys that can play up there in a variety of roles. You know, I think Darwin's getting, you know, Quintero's been getting more time, and you know, the Salt Lake game, and I think the San Jose game, you know, he brought a positive influence into the game. And so, you know, I think that we have guys that can step in there. You know, look, have we ruled out, you know, looking to continue to strengthen in that spot? No, absolutely not. But, you know, I'd say that's how we're viewing it as well. But, you know, Max has done a good job, but, you know, also it's an opportunity for others.
Explain Darwin Quintero to the fan base, because this is the one I think that is most confusing to them. And Tab has done it repeatedly in his way and in a very good way. But, you know, for the people that aren't really deep down into the Dynamo, when they see last year's DP with all the skill, the 7 goals, 5 assists, and they don't see him starting, all they go to is DP and Darwin Quintero's not starting. How do you explain that to that type of fan that maybe isn't, is engaged maybe?
I would say, look, how would I explain that? You know, I would just say that, look, we believe that Darwin will, you know, continue to get more opportunities to contribute. You know, he's had a positive influence when he's been coming in, you know, in particular the last 4 to 6 weeks. And look, I mean, you could go throughout the league and there's, you know, different times of year, you know, different moments, you know, different, you know, styles of play that are going on. I mean, it all ties into it, you know. And I think that, you know, right now, you know, we've Tab's done a good job of implementing a style of play, and you know, and there are certain things that are important when you are a high pressing team and you have that style of play. And so, but there's also moments where you can bring in someone like Darwin with quality, you know. And you saw, I think, last game. I mean, he has different qualities than the other guys don't have. And so, I mean, it's a balance. Glenn, it's a balance. I mean, and that's what I would say, you know, to the fan that maybe isn't watching as closely.
To your point, I would agree. I think the San Jose game was the most dangerous for me that he's looked. That's just through my lens. I'm only speaking for myself. And it does seem, though, that under Tab Ramos, there is a real clear vision of, hey, this is the way we're going to play, and you're going to have to fit into this. Is that fair to say? And you know, you guys are working in tandem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. I mean, we meet multiple times a day. We, you know, we're on the phone sometimes till late into the night, going through different things, and you know, we're working very, very hard together on this. And I mean, you know, and it's important, especially when you're looking to bring players in as well. You know, I mean, teammates is a good example. You know, I mean, there's a reason. You know, he fits a positional profile with our style of play where he's comfortable being higher up the field. Has good recovery speed, is good, you know, when he gets isolated, defending 1v1, he's very good in the air. You know, so that's an example of, you know, how, hey, we work through this process and look to get players that fit our system and our style of play.
Tab Ramos joining us here on Soccer Matters. Matt Jordan joining us here on Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. Tab does join us as well. All right, let's talk about, and you had mentioned this, let's talk about the 2022, you know, new MLS league, which is expected to be a bridge between MLS is next, and kind of be that launching pad. The logo, the name is not unknown yet. It's going to be finalized kind of in September and October. 2026 matches. There'll be a championship in December. Take us a little bit more into that and how that's going to work, because I know there's independent teams. How do you see that working with the USL? And most importantly, how do you see that working for the Houston Dynamo?
Yeah. Well, look, I think the USL has been great, and MLS has been great partners for a lot of years. But at the same time, as the league is growing, you know, the demands are growing. And I think, you know, it's going to be important that this new league is starting, and we are currently, you know, participating in the pilot program of that league with our U23 team. As I mentioned, we just went and played in San Jose. I think what's going to be important with it, Glenn, is one, it's in market. Two, it mirrors the MLS season, and the transfer windows will as well. And I think what you're going to really see is a lot of teams are going to be evolving the space in the 19s, right? And so, you know, there's going to be an increased emphasis on the 15s, 17s, and the 23s. That is really that bridge up to the first team. You know, and I think there's still some layers and things to work through. The league is working through, you know, to get the league officially sanctioned. And then you talked about the independent owners within that league. I mean, you know, right now it's you know, MLS focused and MLS driven, but you know, I know that there is the opportunity that some independent teams could come into it. And listen, I mean, I think the number one goal is just to have meaningful games that help prepare players and develop players. And we're excited to be a part of it.
There's a media component to this too. I mean, apparently they're going to want to televise all the matches and things. And try and, you know, obviously get visibility, sell sponsorship in and around it. But this would essentially be your reserve team. What I'm not clear about is, would, even though it's being called an under 23 league, will there be some exception to having some older players that maybe you're on the back end of your roster above under 23 that get minutes or coming back from injury? I mean, can this be utilized in that way as well?
Yeah, that's a key element of this, Glenn, is there will be first team players that, you know, maybe if they're not as getting as many minutes, that they'll play in those games. As we had, you know, we had four players that were signed to first team contracts play in our last U23 game, with Mateo and Ian Hoffman and Danny and Juan. And then, you know, with that game, for example, we had, you know, the majority of our U19 what we call high potential players that were participating in the game. And then we had a good mix of 3 to 4 U-17 players. So I think that's what is going to, the roster is going to be compromised of is basically a group of your first team players from your 23, which is really kind of a blend of your 17s and your 19s. And then there will be the opportunity to sign other players, that basically maybe you'd be competing with a USL team to sign. And then I think what will probably happen is that, organically, let's say there's a young 22-year-old guy, he has to make a decision between a USL contract and an MLS U23 or MLS 2 contract, right? He's got to make a decision. Okay, hey, look, maybe I feel that's a better path for me to be over there with the Houston Dynamo FC, because then I'm going to have a quicker, basically, plan to get into a first-team setting when I do well. So I think that can give you a little bit of insight of what the makeup of the roster will be.
Interesting. And I mean, this is obviously going to be a proper reserve team. So, is this something that you might take to Avaya or a situation like that where, you do build protocol around the game? You are trying to get attendance because you're going to need those elements for player development too. Coverage, is that all going to happen, or is this going to be like the old MLS Reserve League where you're playing in front of nobody? And not that that's not good, but, you do want the element of fans, environment, guys playing in front of fans, and then all that crossover great interaction between all the different levels of Dynamo teams from the youth side all the way up to the first team.
Yeah, no, organizationally right now we are going to venue specs there's certain parameters that need to be met, for the venues. You got to have, obviously if you have to be able to produce the game on TV, you have to have certain amount of seats. So there's a lot of different elements that we're reviewing right now. We're looking at different venues, including, our own stadium as well. It's exciting. I mean, it's really exciting. And then how is that buying to get, people have to watch the game? I mean, it is different than, the first team game and what that's all about. And so, I think it'll be a little bit more, probably tailored to specific, people that are really interested in seeing, the young players up there, up and coming, and so it's really exciting then.
Yeah, it could be a tremendous vehicle of promotion. Another tremendous, to your point, people can go down and look at the, hey, I remember when I saw him, on the under 23 team type thing. So it is, I guess there's a lot of loose ends to tie.
We're looking for a lot of it, but like, for example, we have Marcel Palomino, for example, right now, who's on loan with the Charlotte Independents, with Mike Jeffries, who actually used to be my coach when I was playing back in Dallas. And, Marcel's doing great down there. I mean, I spoke to him today, actually, and he was just like, Matt, it's amazing. It's exactly what I needed. Next year, he would be here in Marcus. And, he's playing those games. All of our staff is there every day. There's players moving up and down. I mean, it's a game changer. It really is.
Well, Matt, listen, thank you so much for sticking around a second segment. Good information for Dynamo fans. I appreciate you coming on. As always, have a good rest of the night, and we will talk to you soon. We'll see you at the stadium on Saturday.
Thank you, Glenn. I appreciate it.
All right, that's Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. A lot of information there for you to digest, Dynamo fans. So there you go. So a couple of things. Seattle against Austin FC, if you watched that game last week. Historic moment. They field a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old, and then some 17, 18, and 19-year-olds. 5 players in their starting lineup. Now, look, they can afford to do that with where their record is, but they are doing things right. Let's not face it. These teams that are successful with their player development have taken it serious at an earlier birth date. And they're reaping the benefits of it. Atencio, Bobelair, Reed Baker, Whiting. I mean, that kid was trying to get in the box and score a goal. He's 16 years old. He had a haircut like the Beatles. So it's interesting. And then you look up in Austin. You know, they're not happy with their production from an attacking standpoint. They've been shut out in 8 of 10 games. So they're trying to bring in a former River Plate guy that played at Zenit St. Petersburg, Sebastian Druisi, who I remember playing in the Copa Libertadores for River Plate. Long-range finisher. I mean, this guy has every element you would want out of midfield. I hope the Dynamo can sneak in there and steal him. you know, things are happening. This league is accelerating. It's getting harder and harder to be competitive. And it's exciting with Ted Siegel coming in. And to Tab Ramos and Matt Jordan's point, I would simply say this about new ownership. Ted Siegel has nothing. He's not accountable or responsible for anything that has happened prior to this franchise, to this club. So in the context of how quickly you want things done, may not be on the same timeline as the owner. That said, he has made some moves already, but can't judge him on what has happened in the past. So, lots of hope and possibility. And it begins with RSL this weekend, who, by the way, had a great game from Bobby Wood, the former U.S. national team member. All right, we'll take a break here. It's the Police, Voices Inside My Head. Speaking of that, Felipe Cardenas of The Athletic is coming up. Incredible interview here on this whole situation with Gabriel Heinze at Atlanta United, Carlos Bocanegra, Darren Eales, how this all went down. And Felipe, this is an interview you're not going to want to miss.
ESPN 97.5.
Hello, people. This is Alexi Lawless, and you are listening to Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis on ESPN.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We roll on here tonight and continue the soccer talk. Again, it's Thursday night, the Gold Cup semifinals here in Houston. It'll be Mexico and Canada, and I know many of you will be getting out to that game. It's going to be a big night here in Houston. Big thank you, as always, to our presenting sponsor, John Daspit, and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they will take care of you 24/7. Car, boat, motorcycle accident, you need representation. It is our presenting sponsor, who, by the way, gets soccer on the air. John Daspit, Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Next guest from The Athletic, the great writer Felipe Cardenas joins us now. And Felipe, thank you very much for having you on. You've been on my hit list of people I've wanted to get on here.
Hey, happy to join, Glenn. Finally, we get together. Finally.
Yes, yes. That byline, that name, all those good articles, I've been reading them. Now it's great to actually have you on the program. And, you know, I think you know where I'm going with Atlanta United. So I'm going to just start it off with this statement here, basically, and just ask you, was this simply about an autocratic coach and a star player?
I think it had a lot to do with that. I think what's interesting about that question is that we still don't really know why Gabriel Heinze was dismissed. You know, the front office gave us sort of a vague answer about a variety of issues stemming around like the notion of leadership on a daily basis. And then they kind of stepped into other areas of about being more accessible, you know, the ability to connect with fans, with media. That's something that Heinze was not doing. Of course, the COVID protocols weren't allowing him to really do that, but he has always had that style. He's always been very hard-nosed, very old-fashioned with the way he manages players, with the way he manages reporters. So for me, having done a lot of homework before he arrived in Atlanta, I wasn't really surprised by any of those things. What was really surprising, though, was what transpired between Josef Martínez and Heinze just weeks before he was fired. So I think that does certainly have a lot to do with it. Josef Martínez is one of the greatest strikers the league has ever seen. I mean, just based on his numbers, he's a former MVP, he's an MLS Cup winner, a perennial starting 11 or best 11 in MLS. And then he falls out with the coach right away and they're losing games. And so I thought like the writing was somewhat on the wall, but still 13 games into a season, it's so rare in U.S. sports, especially MLS, for a coach to be let go. So that was a big move.
So you're not buying it with simply results oriented, the dismissing of Heinze?
I don't think so. No, I mean, the results had a lot to do with it because it wasn't working. If you look at the numbers, 2 wins in 13 games, they had not won a game in 8 matches. That's been since extended to 10. So they're on a 10 game stretch without a win. And so that certainly didn't help. But if you're bringing in a coach like Eberhard Heinze, you understand that whatever methodology he's going to incorporate, which is a well-known methodology, it's going to take time. It's going to take time to develop the players, to understand how he wants to play, the demands that he's going to put on these players on a daily basis, not just in training and games. And so I think results had to do with it, but it's not the whole picture. It's so rare for to just kind of like hook a coach after 13 games when, you know, the star player wasn't playing. You had several players off on international duty, several starters. So that was also well known. I think Heinze knew he was going to lose players. So still a lot of questions around the dismissal of Gabriel Heinze.
Yeah, and you've mentioned it, and you mentioned it in the article. And the article's really in depth. I would say go read the article if you really want to get into the details that Felipe takes you into at The Athletic with this whole Gabriel Heinze firing and Josef Martínez. Martínez comes back from Copa America. All of a sudden, he's training on his own. My understanding is he had medical clearance to play, so there's nothing wrong there with COVID or anything. Did we ever know exactly why he was banished to, you know, the land of misfit toys here to be on his own? I still am trying to find out what that was about.
Yeah, we don't. We don't know. I mean, Gabriel Heinze would not elaborate. You know, on when I asked him straight up after my sources had told me that Josef Martínez was medically cleared to play about 5-6 days after he arrived from the Copa America in Brazil. Now that's when I knew something was going on. And Gabriel Heinze just so transparent when I asked him during a Zoom scrum, you know, why Josef Martínez was training on his own. He just told us, he's like, it's a coach's decision. It has nothing to do with his fitness, but he would not elaborate on the reasons why. And, you know, still today, it's not clear. Josef Martínez kind of took the diplomatic approach when he was presented to the media a week ago and just kind of praised his coach and kind of said that he gets along with every coach and he had to be a professional and train on his own and go through that. Heinze's camp has been talking to outlets in Argentina. They spoke with La Nación, which is one of the biggest outlets, not only in Argentina, in South America. And in the way it was presented, it was written sort of like a difference in opinion on the approach to how they should work, like a difference in opinion between Martínez and Heinze on how the day-to-day approach to being a professional soccer player and how that coach and relationship should go. So it seemed like the difference of opinion was one of those reasons. But from my reporting, you know, I think the overtraining had a lot to do with it. The fact that they weren't winning games. Guys were getting hurt. Josef Martínez coming off a big knee surgery. I'm sure he was trying to protect himself, protecting his teammates. And he's a guy that's been here since the beginning. So when the results don't go your way and the players aren't happy on a daily basis, you know, there's going to be somebody that steps up and maybe perhaps confronts a coach. I think in Heinze's case, if that happens, it doesn't matter if you're the star player, if you're making $3 million a year, it's his way or the highway, and that's what transpired.
So autocratic, no question, coming from Argentina. Who knows what the players' associations are like down in Argentina, if they even exist at all. You know, I'm getting this. I'm also getting that there's these big egos here. Now, the first thing I would say, if Heinze comes in, first thing you want to do is get your star player in your camp. You just went into it might have been the actual day-to-day administering of the training sessions, maybe the physical workload, the things like that. That's not into the tactical side of it. Is that correct what I'm saying?
Yes. You know, I think Josef Martínez, you know, he's accustomed to playing as a lone striker, even under Tata Martino is very much a 4-2-3-1. Mm-hmm. You know, he was not playing a lot for Venezuela because Venezuela ended up always playing with one striker and Salomon Rondon was always the guy that the previous manager would go with. So it's not a notion of like, oh, you know, Heinze wants to play with two strikers. No, like it was clear that tactically, yes, Heinze had changed a lot because he was bringing a very intense and demanding man-marking sort of system. And they weren't creating chances. You know, they're a young team. I think they were struggling to grasp that tactical approach. And as a result, when Joseph was playing in games, because he came back from injury and he came back from an international duty, you know, he wasn't seeing a lot of the ball. But it's a different team. He doesn't have Miguel Almirón and Tito Villalba and Julian Gressel there. Julian Gressel, look how he's doing right now with DC. Looks like a different player. So I think it's more from Joseph's end. I feel like personnel, he looks around, it doesn't see the same team. I don't think it was a tactical issue. The players, when they would speak about Heinz's approach to tactics, it was, you know, pretty glowing. I mean, a lot of the players were really impressed by him and how he approached the game and how he managed the mid-game adjustments and what he was asking players to do. Now, again, the execution wasn't there. So it's certainly, in my opinion, not something where player and coach were kind of battling over who should play and how they should be playing.
Right. Talking to Felipe Cardenas, The Athletic, do you know if anybody reached out to Gabriel Heinze about, had he talked to Tata Martino? Obviously, Dario Sala is a friend of mine, played on FC Dallas. You referenced him in some of your stuff. Did he talk to any of these people about the difference in culture in Major League Soccer as to coaching in Argentina? And, you know, look, you and I could sit here and probably be pretty correct if we said, look, if you don't pull off some of your positions a little bit or learn to adjust, you may struggle in Major League Soccer.
No, I mean, without a doubt, even Tata Martino late in 2018, he adjusted. He went to that 5-3-2, which it immediately sounds like a defensive formation for a coach that was always very attacking, but they continued to attack. But at the same time, they had a lot more security in the back during the playoffs of 2018. So even Tata adjusted. You know, to answer your question, in my reporting and when I talk to sources, remember, like, this was a 6-month courtship. You know, Atlanta United, I first heard about Heinze at Atlanta United in October of 2020. He's presented in December. So they were talking for a long time. They knew what they were getting themselves into, both parties. And when I talked to sources about that, you know, what they told me is that, A, you know, Heinze was well aware of the culture of the club and how the success that they had. And even Tata Martino, a coach who Heinze played under at Newell's Old Boys. What became clear, though, in my reporting, and then again, Heinze was asked this during his presentation, he doesn't have a relationship with Tata Martino. You know, he was asked by a reporter if he had spoken to Tata, and he said, no, we don't talk. That confirmed what my sources were telling, too. No, they aren't close. They don't talk. They're not reaching out to each other about Atlanta. So I think that says more about Heinze and perhaps how he maybe manages relationships, because that's a former coach of his, and they're coming from the same Bielsa coaching tree now, but they don't have a relationship. And the fact that he didn't reach out to Tata before coming to Atlanta, I think it shows what you mentioned, sort of like an autocratic way of saying, I'm coming in, this is going to be my project, it's going to be my way. And clearly, though, that approach just did not work out.
So amplified the ego, maybe.
Perhaps, yeah.
To maybe the potential problem here.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt you have two huge egos in Joseph and Gabriel Heinze. Mm-hmm. Even if you remove Joseph Martinez, you still have a very confident coach in Gabriel Heinze, who has always had the same demeanor from the time he was a player for Manchester United and Real Madrid to when he played with the national team in Argentina, and then he became a coach. It's very much he's a hard man, you know, and he goes by that. He talks about
stuff. He did kick a few people. We know that for sure.
Yeah. But he also professed this way of managing players and being really close with the players. And in my reporting in Argentina, that came through, that he had a close relationship, but he did grind them a lot. When you talk to players in Atlanta, a lot of them have good things to say, but it doesn't always go the coach's way when you're flipping a switch on a club that didn't need a culture change, but it just seemed really abrupt and hostile at times.
I did see in your article, Brooks Lennon had a lot of glowing things to say about playing under Gabriel Heinze. So maybe the truth lies in between a little bit, but where does Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra come in? Because look, after all, they're the guys doing the hiring. They have to be under a lot of pressure now after what was a spectacular entry into Major League Soccer.
Yes, and I think they would own up to that accountability and the pressure. They understand now, especially in a city like Atlanta, where, you know, we cover Atlanta United like a national team. It's not a local team. It's a big brand. There are a lot of reporters here covering this team that we've and we've kind of uncovered the way it was and what's happening now. The success that they had, you know, Carlos Bocanegra and Darren Eales deserve credit. They absolutely do. But they also should be held accountable based on what has happened in the last 3 years. You know, they lose Tata, and yes, Tata took the job with Mexico, but he fell out with Carlos Bocanegra. That relationship really never got off to a good start. They go with Frank DeBoer, and he never connected really with the locker room, with the city. And yes, he won trophies, but it just seems so unstable throughout his time here. Eventually, he's fired because it just the results were just really bad in 2020. And then with all that being said, they put all their eggs in one basket with Gabriel Heinze and what we know about him. And so they chose a very volatile personality to come into a difficult situation at the club, expecting perhaps to manage the coach and think, well, look at the success he had at Vélez Sarsfield. Look at the success he had at Argentina Juniors. This club needs to be turned around. And it just didn't, it was a risk that did not work out for them. And so they're now looking for their fourth head coach in 5 years. I think that in any industry, you know, a hiring manager is responsible for the performance of the people that they bring in. And so far, the performances have not been up to standard ever since Tata Martino left. So certainly Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra, and they've said it, they need to get this hire right. They need to turn this around.
Well, Felipe, this is amazing stuff. The other thing I love what you just said there was about the way the team is covered in the Atlanta market, and every market in Major League Soccer should be so lucky to have this type of coverage. How much fun is it for you to be in a market where, you know, you're not necessarily, you know, you're not the Lone Ranger, and you've got all these, you know, colleagues working on the great coverage of this, and you are allowed to go into deep stories like these. I mean, I find it fantastic.
It's great. You know, I moved to Atlanta 11 years ago for another job. I was working in advertising. Now I look back, I'm like, wow, like I'm lucky to be here, you know, and to work for a company like The Athletic that allows us to do these sorts of stories. Now, it's true. There's like a healthy competition among all the colleagues here. We help each other. We talk to each other. We see what the others are doing. And I think that elevates the work as well. I think it also elevates the pressure on the club because it's not just one blogger. It's not just one local beat writer. Right. We're all kind of in this together. We're all putting the pressure on the club, on the players, in good times and in bad. You know, we were there when we were all of us were writing great stories about Atlanta United. So that doesn't change the way we approach the job in good times and bad. You know, Frank DeBoer, I enjoyed covering him. You know, he was a personality. You know, he was a different sort of coach than Tata Martino, and the team that was here, they were very talented as well. When it went kind of south and the roster is deconstructed, even those are stories that are worth covering and understanding why that happens and the decision-making process. And I think that's what, in my opinion, a big club should be prepared for. We're going to ask you why you made these decisions, why you let this player go, why you hired this coach. And I think now the kind of the community in Atlanta is getting used to that sort of thing.
It's fantastic. And as you said, I mean, healthy pressure is not just the team, the players, it's the media, it's the fans, it's everybody. And it just sounds wonderful and very exciting. You should have contacted me 11 years ago. I would have foreshadowed you as being the next great soccer writer. You should have contacted me. We could have got you out of that PR gig right away.
Oh, gosh. I'm glad to be out of it. But, you
know. And my listeners aren't seeing your face right now because we're doing this via Zoom. But if they did, that was fantastic. Listen, this is a great job. Thank you really for taking us deep into this story. It's a good one. We want to get you back on again at your convenience, and we'll continue to talk some of the other teams you cover and everything else. Felipe, thank you so much.
Anytime, Glenn. Thanks a lot.
All right, that's Felipe Cardenas, The Athletic. I highly recommend you follow him on Twitter. Also, read his articles. The Athletic is doing a great job covering the game of soccer. We'll take a break here. The break is brought to you by FM Kitchen and Bar. Okay, so it's north of Washington Avenue. You get into FM Kitchen and Bar. Here's the thing I like about it. Great craft cocktails and great food. It's not one or the other. They got the big outdoor area. It's like a beer garden. You can bring your dog. You can bring your kids. It is FM Kitchen and Bar, and we thank Jason and everybody over there for their support of Soccer on the Radio. All right, stay with us. We roll on.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. We are awaiting the Gold Cup semifinal on Thursday. Of course, Mexico will be in town. Energy Stadium will be rocking. It will be a wonderful night to see Mexico and Canada, and I'm wondering if you're going. All right, Soccer Matters is always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys, they're going to work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. A big thank you to our presenting sponsor, John Daspit. And John Daspit helps us get great interviews like this. He is our great friend here on Soccer Matters. TV3's Jordi Sunyer joins us now from Barcelona. Jordi, thank you very much for coming on as always.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Such a great pleasure as always.
So you had the great pleasure and the great honor of calling the Copa America final in Spain for TV3. Obviously, it's a big deal, the Copa America final with Lionel Messi and him being a Barcelona player. What was the reaction and sort of the numbers on this game, and how interested was the Barcelona public around what Lionel Messi was doing in Copa America?
Well, as you can imagine, it was a huge success here in the region, in Catalonia. We had a 44% of audience share, which is very big for our network, because people here expected, and I think many people in the world of football expected Lionel Messi to win, to lift this trophy, to lift this Copa America, because we're watching the last dances of Lionel Messi in the Spanish La Liga, in the Champions League, in international tournaments. And for some moments, it seemed like everything was, I would say, even prepared for watching Messi winning his first major title with the Argentinian national team. He could shine in the games prior to the final, because all statistics have, nearly all statistics in the Copa America have had Lionel Messi as their leader, goals, assists, good passes, everything. But really, the final was not a brilliant game, neither by Argentina nor by Brazil. And Messi, indeed, he played injured because Lionel Scaloni, the Argentinian coach, revealed that after the game. So it was not a good game by Messi. He even missed a great chance of scoring the second goal, and a historic goal for him that would have put him level with Pelé as striker for South American national teams. But anyway, we had to see, the world of football had to see the best player, maybe the best player ever, lifting a major title. And that's why many people here watched this final, even if it was at 2 a.m. in the morning Spanish time. So it was a huge success for us, and even, of course, for Lionel Messi.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3, joining us, called the Copa America final between Argentina and Brazil. So do you see visible signs of the Barcelona fans happy for Lionel Messi that, you know, that he won the Copa America? And then does that get related to Barcelona and like, okay, this is good, Messi's feeling great, he won the Copa America, now he's going to help us back here at Barcelona in the next season?
The feeling here is Messi will stay. As you know, today Messi is still a free agent because he hasn't, let's say, signed again a new contract with Football Club Barcelona. But Everything is agreed. The thing is, Barcelona has to reduce their salary amount, their salary cap, because La Liga is very strict in this sense. And as you know, Barca has lost revenues due to the pandemic and the mismanagement of the Josep Maria Bartomeu board, and nearly 200 million euros less of revenues last season. So they have to reduce their salary cap. And this means selling players. This means reducing the salaries of some of the best players in the team. Griezmann was likely to leave Barcelona, but finally, it seems, according to last information, he could stay, reducing his salary. The same for Piqué, for Jordi Alba, for Sergi Busquets, for Sergio Roberto. And with Messi, the same had to happen. Messi was nearly forced to reduce his salary, but there are good feelings. There's a good relationship between Leo Messi and all his entourage with the new board of FC Barcelona, and that has eased the things. So everybody's convinced, Messi will say. It's not easy to reduce the salary cap of FC Barcelona until the level marked by La Liga, but some days ago, the president, Joao Laporta, said he thought in the next weeks that could be sorted out. It would be possible to meet this level. So I think Barca fans expect for Messi, for Barcelona, to be a good year. Even if it was, everybody thought it could be a transition year because of all these financial problems. But Messi will come back in a good mood after Copa America. And I think Barcelona can have a good season. I don't know if they will fight for titles, but it will be not the transition season one could expect in the worst of scenarios.
Talking to Jordi Sunyer of TV3. Okay, some of their signings: Eric Garcia, Sergio Aguero, Memphis Depay, Emerson. These are some of the new guys being brought in. A couple of these are free transfers as well, so that works when it comes to the finances. Your thoughts on some of those signings?
First of all, we have to think Barcelona right now can pay a lot of money for a transfer. They have to look for swaps with other clubs. I give you a player, you give me another player, or free transfers. And they have had to be clever in the transfer market. I think Eric Garcia is a good signing for Barcelona because Spanish international, as you know, he has played the Euros. He's playing for the Spanish national team in the Olympics. Barcelona fan since childhood. You need to renew the defense because there are players like Samu Umtiti struggling with injuries that cannot give the level that the team requires. Memphis Depay. Well, he said during his unveiling some days ago, Memphis Depay, that he didn't come to Barcelona only because of Ronald Koeman, but that Ronald Koeman was a key factor for him accepting Barcelona proposal, even if he had better offers than the Barcelona one. Koeman likes Memphis Depay. It seems the striking partnership, during the first games of the season will be Messi, Aguero, Memphis Depay. You know, Messi roaming through the attack like a free spirit, as he always does. But Koeman has got a lot of faith in Memphis Depay, and it could also be a good signing. Let's see what happens with Emerson. He's returning from Betis because Betis had a loan for 2 years from Barcelona for Emerson, and now Emerson's coming back. He has gained experience in La Liga. And as you know, even with Sergiño Dest, but the right back position is one that has caused problems to Barcelona this last year. So Barcelona, I think they need competition in this area, even if it could be Sergiño Dest season. It will be a very important season for the American player. Clever signings. And Koeman now knows what's the situation in the club, knows how to work. Let's see how it works. But Barcelona's being clever, I think, considering the situation in they are.
Jordi Sunyer, TV3, the best as always. Thank you for all this update on La Liga, Barcelona, Spain. And Jordi, until next time, thank you so much. Stay safe in Barcelona.
Thanks to you. Stay safe, Glenn. Big hug, big. It has been a pleasure, of course, again, being here with you.
That was Jordi Sunyer. We wrap it up here tonight on ESPN 97.5. A couple of reminders here. Our presenting sponsor is John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Big thank you to Advantage BMW Midtown, Danish Inspirations, FM Kitchen and Bar, Cactus Music. Hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. Instagram, the same, Glenn Davis Sock. For our producer, Aaron Raybould, all of you listening in, remember the podcasts are at ESPN975.com. On behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis. Good night, everybody.
ESPN 97.5.